Okay, so we are picking up here with the shiurim, the series on raising children. We'll try Blin Eder at the end to get to the parsha also, but we're continuing here in the halachos. So you have in the source sheet, if you remember, it means you have photographic memory, the last four sources on last week's sheet were the first four sources on this week's sheet, which were basically, I guess we're starting by summing up and really following up on last week's ending, which is the following. When all of the dust settles, and this is what we're going to follow through, 1, 2, 3, 4 over here, when all of the dust settles, the post can basically delineate for us three stages of chinuch b'mitzvos lo seseh. Remember last week, we spoke about how there's a concept of chinuch on positive mitzvos, obviously. 2 weeks ago, we spoke about where that comes from and what it might involve and who it might involve. Then last week, we spoke about the fact that it even includes mitzvos lo seseh, according to many poskim, not according to all. We mentioned Rav Schechter's idea explaining how that's true, the Maharal, etc. But we came to the conclusion that many of the poskim, including the Mishnah Berurah, including many prominent poskim, assume that there is a mitzvah chinuch even on mitzvos lo seseh, even on negative commandments, meaning we have to try to train our children to avoid isurim the same way we have to train them to do mitzvos, correct? That's how we decided last week. We also had different stages of chinuch, and that's what I want to come back to now, which is the concept of being katan ha'ochel nevelos u'shreifos. Remember the Gemara Nivamos on Kuf Yadalid? If a child is eating something non-kosher, are you mitzvah, are you commanded to separate him from doing that, to prevent him from doing that? So we said Beis Din certainly does not have to, a third party does not have to, but parents, that's the source number one over here, aval aviv, mitzvah, ligor, bo, ulaf risho, miyasa daraisa. We'll get back to the daraisa darabanan soon. A father, a parent, has the, it's incumbent upon him to make sure to stop the kid from eating, but we're saying a third party, an objective onlooker, they don't have to stop the kid from eating the yisurim. That's one thing we spoke about at the end of last week. And then additionally, we spoke about actively training them in it as well. The other thing which we mentioned, but we're going to get to a little bit more tonight, is the question of actively feeding the child in Isser. So even if in some case you would assume that you don't have to necessarily separate the child, are you allowed to literally feed him treif? Are you allowed to give him nevela? Are you allowed to feed him something that's not kosher or help him do an Isser, whatever the Isser might be? Everything we'll talk about except for Shabbos as of now, but we know there's Shem, maybe next time even, we'll talk about Hilchos Shabbos. So are you allowed to cause the child to do Isser? And that's a separate question we want to get to now. So let's break it down into three categories over here, and you look in source number two to get started. First of all, you have a katan who doesn't have any understanding at all. Any understanding at all. So let's call it 2 years old, maybe a three-year-old in some cases. No understanding of what's going on. So, and just to be clear, again, I think I said this last week, but I think you have to figure out each kid and each mitzvah in and of itself. I do think, and tell me from your experiences, a child understands Shabbos very young. Not all the intricacies, but they understand today's different, correct? Like I have a three-year-old. He looks at me before he is Michal Shabbos, and then we throw rocks at him. That's how you train them. You gotta throw something at them, and they know the halacha. But he looks at me first, like he knows he's not supposed to, and he knows the food is special, and he gets the concept of Saturday versus the other days of the week. So Shabbos is really unique in that way. I mean, really early on they get it, and that's very dangerous because you want to make sure you're training them early on, and that chas v'shalom worse than that, which we'll talk about again in another time. But let's say 2 or 3 year olds for other isurim, you know, things that the kids have no understanding whatsoever. So there is no chiyuv whatsoever to stop him from doing isurim. If he intends to violate some prohibition, you don't have any chiyuv to stop him from doing so. You have in source number 3, l'chol adam afilu tinuk eino ba'avan aklal. Well, actually, I'll come back to it. Let's leave that for a second. You have no obligation to stop a child like this from doing the isur. However, and this is the part that you're going to want to read in Mishnah Berurah Sifkat and Dalet, which is source number 3 that I was just reading. Even so, Usser, says the Mishnah Berurah commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, you are not allowed to encourage the child to violate an Isser. That's a separate thing. I mean, you don't have to stop him from doing so when he's not a bar havana, when he doesn't understand. But Usser to actively give him l'chol adam, whether you're a father or another person, even if the kid has no understanding whatsoever, he's just a two-year-old, and you give him treif beef jerky or something like that, that's usher, that's not okay. But davar zeh, hu usher min ha-Torah, says the Mishnah, that's an isher daraisa, v'alfino amidechsib b'shratzim, lo sa'achilum, lo sochlum. So we'll get back to this b'li neder, mitzvah Hashem, soon. I made a bracha already on this. Yeah. Absolutely. But let me ask you about this. A two-year-old boy. You have no chiv to stop him, correct? Let's say he's reaching for a treif beef jerky. Do you have to stop him? We're leaving one other issue on the side, which we'll come back to soon. But do you have to stop him according to this? No. Can you give it to him? So in that case is what we're talking about, where you don't have an obligation to stop him, you still can't give it to him actively. Makes sense to everyone? So that's what the Mishnah Berurah is spelling out for us. Over here, that's an Isser Daraisa. That Isser Daraisa, B'li Neder, Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to return to later in the night. Okay, that's the first category. The second category is you have a middle stage. When you're at 2 or 3, you have no understanding at all. When you're at 5 or 6, you're starting to be chayv in chinuch in general. Maybe you're taking a lulav. Maybe you're doing things actively in terms of chinuch, even positive commandments, correct? 5 or 6, they have a little bit of understanding. What about the in-between stage? Between like 3 and 4, early 5, that age range, what about there? So if a katan has some understanding, if you look in Sif Katan Gimel, this is source number 2 in the Mishnah Berurah, so there a katan has some understanding, the minor has some understanding of what's going on, but he's not quite at the age of chinuch yet, there the parents have an obligation to actively prevent him from doing Yisurim, even rabbinic prohibitions. We'll come back to that also, B'li Neder, Mitzvah Hashem, soon. They have a chiv to stop the kid from doing it. So you see him going to reach for the treif. He's 4 years old. He's not quite chayv and chinuch yet. But he knows, he understands what's going on. You have to stop him. You have to hold him back from having the treif. You can't let him partake of it. Now, that's true as the father or as the mother. That's not true as what we call basin in the Gemara, which means third party, unrelated person on the side who sees him going for it. You see some other guy's kid going for the treif bacon, or what did we say last week? You have a three-year-old who crosses the street and goes to McDonald's, right? He crosses another one and goes to McDonald's. So if it's your kid, you better get across the street and stop him. But if it's someone else's kid, let him go eat treif. Remember one time I was with my siblings at someone's house for a meal. Well, I was younger, much younger. I was single, so I'm the youngest in my family, so I have a lot of nieces and nephews. And I was already an uncle when I was 10 years old or something. So it's Jacob, that's my first nephew. So it wasn't that family, it was a different family. But we were sitting at a meal together, and the kids, all the nieces and nephews, were playing in another room. And then all of a sudden we just saw something out of the corner of our eyes. So we look out the window, which faces the street, and the two, three-year-old, whatever it was walking across the street by themselves. I mean, the parents were eating the lunch, they weren't paying attention. Kid was walking across the street. They went to the swings in the other person's yard, and they were playing on the swings by themselves across the street. So we're lucky it wasn't McDonald's. You know what I'm saying? She could have easily eaten McDonald's. But so if you saw that, you as the parent would have to stop them. But as a third-party observer, you let them go, let them fresh, let them enjoy the treif. It's really not a problem. You want to go out of your way to stop them. Maybe it's okay to stop them. No one's saying it's us to stop them. But you don't have any obligation. There's no mitzvah on you to do so. Okay. That's the middle stage. And that's, again, strictly a chinuch mitzvah, which is only on the parents, not on any other people who are objectively third-party people. The third stage is when a child reaches the age of chinuch, and this is, I guess, most obvious. When a child reaches the age of chinuch, 5 or 6 years old, then, in addition to everything we said above, every person, a father, a stranger, it doesn't really matter, needs to separate that kid from doing the isser if they see them doing an isser. Only the parents, though, have the chiv to separate them from a derabanan. So this is where now you're trying to keep track of rules. You could always look this up. But basically at the stage where the child is chayv and chinuch, everyone's chayv to stop them from doing isurim. Only a parent's going to have such a serious obligation that you have to stop them even from rabbinic prohibitions. Okay? So if you see a situation where you see a kid violating and it takes you 10 minutes to figure out if it's derabanan or daraisa, it's probably too late anyway, so don't worry. But that's the halacha, strictly speaking, that you wouldn't have to separate him in such a case, but the father would. So let's come back to this isser that the Mishnah Berurah mentioned for us, a very fascinating idea, that there's an isser that the Mishnah Berurah referred to, if you remember, as lo sochlum, again, in source number 3. He said lo sochlum. By shratzim, we say lo sochlum, and we learn from there an isser not to feed kids isurim. What's that talking about? So we'll start with a different pasuk entirely. The pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Emor says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe Emor el Kohen and Bnei Aaron v'amarta alehem lenefesh lo yitam be'amav. What's that pasuk talking about? So the beginning of Parshas Emor is the command to all of the Kohanim. We have, are you a Kohen also? Are you serious? Okay. So, wow. But 3/4 Kohanim, that's not bad. Well, okay, either way. So, you have Kohanim. So the Torah says Kohanim are not allowed to become tummy. They're not allowed to become ritually defiled, impure, to a dead body, correct? We were just talking about it a second ago, the graves in the Vatican and Rome. So a Kohen can't become tamei to a dead body. So the Torah says, Amarta el Kohen and Emor el Kohen and Bnei Aaron via Marta aleihem lenevesh lo yitam be'amav. So Rashi picks up that there's a very strange, it's not Rashi, he's quoting Chazal, he's quoting from a Gemara, but Rashi quotes, picking up on the fact, hi Ari, you take a sheet, sit down. So he quotes the Gemara, which says that Emor el Kohen b'nei Aaron v'amarta aleihem lenevesh lo yitam be'amav. So isn't that repetitive? It's a double lashon, no? It's saying Emor v'amarta. So why is it saying both? So you remember what Rashi says? Rashi says, lehazir gedolim al hakatanim.
which means certainly a Kohen who's 13 years old, 14 years old, 100 years old, he can't become Tame to a dead body. That's obvious. But the Torah says, Emor lakonim v'amarta, not only do the Kohanim have to keep the laws of ritual purity, but they also have to make sure not to be Metame, the youth, exactly, the child, the minor, even though they're not yet chayiv and mitzvos. Now, just to note, this is interesting. The Sifsei Chachamim is a super commentary on the Rashi. Super commentary. So he picks up on what Rashi is making diukim in, what what Rashi noticed, what's bothering Rashi. So the Sifsei Chachamim is a commentary on Rashi. So he asks an obvious question. The Torah does this all the time, no? Double lashon. The parsha immediately preceding Emor is Kedoshim, right? Kedoshim. Daber al kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta alehem, Kedoshim to you. So daber al kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta alehem. Huh? Oh, very good. So now, you obviously notice the difference. The difference is daber and v'yamarta, but what is that difference fundamentally? So the Sifsei Chacham says like this. He says, dibur, in this context for sure, dibur is a very general, that's also true, very good. Dibur is a general amira. Tell the Jewish people, gather the Jewish people and give them a speech. What should the speech be about? V'yamarta alehem, this is what you should say to them. So the dibur is not specific. V'yamarta comes and qualifies what the dibur is all about. So therefore, Chazal only pick up on certain instances when they know it's really repetitive, and not when they see that there's some nuanced difference between the two words. It's important to keep this in mind, even though it was obvious to you, because you have to realize the chachma of Chazal, the fact they were using. Drushas aren't arbitrary, they're not random. Every drusha that Chazal make has a svara. No matter what it seems like to you from the outside, even when it seems like it's a funny play on words, or even when you can't quite tell the play on words, first of all, oftentimes if you learn the sugya enough times, you end up finding brilliant. The Mefarshim and Chumash help you with this a lot also. They help you understand where the drushas come from. But if we know that Chazal have that wisdom, we'll pay more attention and notice the nuances in the words that lead them to the drushas. So that's the Daber V'yamarta in Kedoshim to you. But Rashi says that's not true here by the Emor V'yamarta. So we learn from here, Lahazir Gedolim Ala Ketanim. Where is this coming from? So Rashi didn't make it up. It's a Gemara, source number 5 on your sheet. The Gemara in Yevamos on Kuf Yudal Malav. The Gemara actually brings here 3 psukim, not just Emor v'yamarta, but 3 psukim. Lo sochlum ki sheketim. You shouldn't eat shratim. You shouldn't eat bugs. Creepy crawlies, because they are disgusting. They're abominable. So the Gemara says, make a drasha. It's not lo sochlum. Not only don't eat them, which is obviously true, you can't eat them, but lo sa'achilum. What does lo sa'achilum mean? Exactly. Actively. What's the? I don't know how to say that in English. Whatever. Don't actively feed them. Trans. Something verb. You know what I mean, though, right? I mean, don't do it onto someone else. So don't feed other people who are not feeding. Lahazir gdolim ala ketanim. So that you shouldn't feed children. Children are chayav mitzvos. Okay, but you shouldn't feed them shratzim. You shouldn't feed them bugs. Or kol nefesh mikem lo sochal dam, the Gemara says. Don't eat blood. Lahazir gdolim ala ketanim. Also to teach you that the gdolim shouldn't feed the blood to little kids. And lastly, emor v'yamarta lahazir gdolim ala ketanim, to make sure that just like you should not become Tame as a Kohen, you also shouldn't be Matame. You also shouldn't, defile the child either, even though they're not Yechayiv and Mitzvos. Those are the 3 cases the Gemara brings. Now, it's interesting. Once the Gemara brings 3 cases, what might you guess? I'm sorry? Meaning it's limited to these 3. Excellent, right? Maybe it's only these 3. Now, the Gemara in general has questions about this. The Gemara has Shnei Ksuvim Abon Ke'echad in Melamdim. Sorry, Shnei Ksuvim. Sorry, I'm blanking on the Gemara phrase. But you know what I'm talking Okay, well, it'll come to me soon. But basically, the Gemara has a debate whether if you have 2 psukim which teach you a rule, the Gemara assumes like this. If you have 1 pasuk which teaches you a rule, the stam assumption, the default, is that it's going on the whole Torah. It's teaching you a rule that's going to be applicable everywhere, right? But let's say the Torah has 2 cases, so maybe the 2 cases are now exceptional. Meaning, if the Torah wanted to tell you that this rule applies in all of Torah, it could have said it once, and you would learn to everywhere else. But here, the Torah said it twice. Maybe it only applies to those 2. And some of the opinions in the Gemara say, no, even 2 times, you assume it applies across the whole Torah. So the Gemara says, okay, but what if it says 3 times? 3 times, maybe for sure, it's an exception. These 3 are an exception. That's a debate in the Gemara, the term I'm blanking on now. But something along the lines of Ein Melamdim from two psukim that come on their own to teach you. So here, there is a minority opinion that says exactly what you guys just said. The Beis Yosef quotes, there's a Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yashar, there's a Trumas Hadeshen who assume maybe it's possible that only these 3 Yisurim are not allowed to be done two, on behalf of, for the child. You can't feed him blood, you can't feed him insects, and you can't be matame him if it's a kohen. But all other yisurim, I don't know, you want to feed him treif, or you want to make him do, you know, I don't know, talk lashon hara, I don't know, what else are you going to do already? So that would not be a problem. But the Ramban, in his commentary on Parshas Emor, he represents the majority opinion. He says, mehem nilmod l'chol yisurin shebatorah. No, these three are not exceptions. These three prove the rule. Why did the Gemara have to say three examples then? So that the Gemara goes on, but it's cut off on the page. Vitzrichi, the Gemara goes on to say why each of these individual cases was necessary to teach you something else, each one of them. But Lamaisa, the Gemara is assuming, and this is what the post can basically assume, that it's usser to cause a child to do an isser. Even though the child's not a bar mitzvah, which literally means he's not obligated in mitzvos, you can't cause him to do the mitzvos, you can't cause him, you can't trip him up, feed him the treif, etc. What's the reason? Anyone have a svar for this? Why would it be that you're not allowed to feed a kid isser, that you're not allowed to make a kid tummy, whatever the case might be? Yeah, say it better. Excellent, excellent. Okay, so you're saying the same thing. The way I'll say it in Hebrew, you're going to be margil him b'kach, right? Meaning, shema yargil, he's going to become accustomed to doing this. Do you remember last week we spoke about one of the reasons that you might not have a concept of chinuch on isurim at all is because when you don't separate a kid from doing an isser, you're not training him to do the isser. You're just not stopping him. The kid's chomping down at McDonald's. So you don't pull him away. You're not telling him to do it. You're not training him to do it. And it happens once in a blue moon. So you're not training him to do it, correct? So maybe, therefore, chinuch shouldn't apply to losis. We knocked it off. But maybe it should be that chinuch doesn't apply to negative commandments because of that. Okay, but let's say you're giving him the McDonald's. Let's say you're feeding him the isser. Let's say you're being metamehim. You're putting him into the beis hakvaras, the kohen. So then you're training the kid to do isurim. Oh, he's not chayiv right now. Absolutely true. He's not going to be punished right now. Absolutely true. He's not going to be punished now. He's not obligated right now. That's true. But you're doing the opposite of chinuch. You're being mechanech him for bad. You're training him to do bad things. So he's going to learn from these character traits and these averos that you're putting in him. Yeah. Right. Should be. It should be. Right. You were asking about it last week, right? I didn't have the full answer. Yeah, it should be. So based on this, this is very, very fascinating. This is a big debate. But the Chassam Sofer in his Tshuvas and Aruch Chaim Siman Pei Gimel, he has a fascinating concept he quotes from the Shemus Adeshin, that based on this reasoning that we just offered, that maybe it's because you're training the kid to do something wrong, so maybe it has the following nafkamina, the following practical difference, halacha lemaisa. Let's say you have a cheresh or a shota, a young child who is deaf-mute, totally unable to communicate, someone who's mentally disabled to the point where they're never going to be fully functioning in terms of all the requirements of the Torah, meaning they'll never become fully obligated in mitzvos. Let's say you have such a child. Can you feed them treif? So we knee-jerk reaction, right? We would know, of course not. They're a kid like any other kid, correct? But why is it a good question? What's the difference here? Normally, I can't give the kid treif. Why? He's going to get used to it, and then when he's older, who cares if he gets accustomed? When he's older, he's going to be obligated, and he's going to keep eating treif. But this kid, even when he gets 13, 14, 15 years old, he's not going to be chayiv in mitzvos. So maybe when you have such a child who's never going to become functional enough to be chayiv in mitzvos, you'd be allowed to feed him treif at that young age. Now, what's the Chassam Sofer talking about? A guy's trying to cut costs by buying only kosher food for half the family, not the other half? Come on, that's like, feed the kid Rahman al-Slan, like he has, it's hard enough. Like, feed him kosher, like keep him having some shaykhs the mitzvahs. No, the Chassam Sofer was talking about the following very, very sad shayla. Baruch Hashem, we have to support institutions who take care of this. Baruch Hashem, this doesn't exist as much anymore because the Jewish community really takes care of its own so much more. But a family had such a child who was not functional enough to live at home, not functional enough to take care of themselves, was weighing down the family, so they had to send him to a facility to take care of the child. Hopefully they were going to visit and everything, but they had to send him out of the home. Now, they lived in wherever, I don't know, Preshburg in the 1800s. There was no summer camp to send them to. There was no Jewish institution to take care of them. So they were going to send them to an institution run by Goyim. The Goyim didn't have a special kosher plan for the kids who come with a special diet. So the question was, am I allowed to send my child to this institution knowing that the non-Jews are going to feed them treif in the institution? Excellent. So let's come back to that in a second. Excellent. So the Chassam Sofer initially, very good point. The Chassam Sofer initially raises this point. He says, maybe based on this Trumas Adeshin, the whole reason for lo sa'achilum, not to feed a kid isurim, is because when they come older, they're going to be accustomed to it, they're going to do the isurim. This kid's never going to have that issue. So it's not an issue. But the Chassam Sofer rejects this. You know why he rejects it? Because we have a klal, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, lo darshin on time of the kra. Meaning, it's absolutely true that every mitzvah has reasons that are, not every mitzvah, almost every mitzvah. We're going to read about a mitzvah this week's parsha that doesn't have a reason that we know. But almost every mitzvah has a reason that we can tap into. Every mitzvah has deeper reasons that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was able to tap into. And somewhere in between, there's things that are not quite inscrutable, but also things that you and I might never get to in our lifetime. There's a range, there's a spectrum of time and mitzvahs going all the way from the most obvious thing, like Shabbos helps us connect to Hashem, relax, and disconnect from distractions in the world. Very, very basic, very simple. A little bit more elevated. It reminds us of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? Meaning you have levels of reasons for mitzvahs. So everyone agrees there are ta'amei ha-mitzvahs. There are reasons for the mitzvahs. We assume they are just that. Ta'am. What does ta'am mean? Reason or? Taste. Very good. Which means ta'amei ha-mitzvahs give you a taste for the mitzvah, but they're not the full thing. You can't know for sure the depth of every mitzvah to its core. So we do assume there are reasons for mitzvahs, and sometimes we can even discern what those reasons are, and sometimes Chazal will even tell us what those reasons are to some extent. But says the Gemara, it's Machlokes Tanoim, but says the Gemara, Lo Darshin on time of the Kra, meaning we don't make halachic decisions based on those reasonings. So we don't look at a reason in the Pasuk and say, oh, if the reason is this, then it won't be an issue in the following scenario. For example, the Gemara says, the wisest person in the history of the Jewish people at that the Gemara is describing, the Chacham we call Adam, was Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was the Chacham. Shlomo HaMelech had two problems. One was that he was Mar Besusim, he had too many horses, and he ended up going back to Mitzrayim. And the other was that he had too many wives. Now, the Gemara explains that Shlomo HaMelech said, what's the reason that I can't have too many wives? They're going to lead me astray. Someone's going to make me do Avodah Zarah at some point. Okay, so what exactly that means is interesting. And secondly, the Gemara says you can't have too many horses as a king. Why? Because the horses are going to have so much transportation, they're going to end up going back to Mitzrayim. So the Gemara assumes that Shlomo HaMelech said, yeah, but I know the reason. And I am Shlomo HaMelech. So if I have a lot of horses, for example, I still won't go to Mitzrayim because I know not to go to Mitzrayim. The Havdil, the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos has a case where I forget which Tana it was. I think it was Rabbi Shmuel, but I forget. Rabbi Shmuel was learning on Shabbos. The halacha is that when a person's learning on Shabbos, they can't, or whatever, doing anything on Shabbos, you can't read to the light of a candle. Why not? Shemiyata. What happens is you're going to turn the lamp like this, and when you tilt the lamp, you're doing it so that you could see better. But what happens is the oil gets picked up by the wick and it burns a little bit more, and you're being speeding up the burning process, so that's a violation on Shabbos, an Isser Daraisa of Mavir, correct? Now, learning by the light is not an Isser Daraisa. Learning by the light is an Isser Derabanan, lest you turn light. Good? So Rabbi Shmuel, I think it was Rabbi Shmuel, whoever it was, he said, yeah, but I'm like one of the guys who made up this reason. I know the deal. I know that you're not allowed to, so I'm going to learn and I won't turn the light. And you know what happened? He learned and he turned the light and he turned the lamp. And he wrote down in his little journal, apparently he wrote down in his journal, I'm going to be chayav echatas when the Beis HaMikdash comes because I violated the Isser Daraisa. So Shlomo HaMelech, on a different level, he also said, I'm not going to violate the Yisurim just because I have a lot of horses. And he ended up going back to Mitzrayim. He ended up going back to Mitzrayim, or marrying Mitzrayim, whatever the case might be. So even Shlomo HaMelech used the time of mitzvahs too much, it ends up leading you to a trip up. So we assume lo darshin on time of the kra. We assume that even when you know a reason, even when you can discern what the svar, what the logic might be behind the mitzvah, even so, a person is not allowed to use that, utilize that in making halachic decisions. Says the Chassam Sofer, you could tell me all you want that the reason for losa achilum is to not train the kid so that when he's older, when he's chayiv, he won't do the averos. You could tell me that, I believe it, it's true, it's the reason. But I'm not going to pass a shaila based on it. I'm not going to decide the halacha based on that reason, because lo darshin in time to kra. Now, this is a fascinating debate, discussion. What's the line? Meaning, what's using the svara, the logic, to determine the parameters of the halacha? And what's using the logic to decide, you know, that the halacha doesn't apply? That's a fascinating discussion. I don't have all the answers to that. You could write full books on this. But here, the Chassam Sofer is saying, apparently, according to him, this is over the line. This is over the line. It happens to be the Chassam Sofer was still makel in that scenario because of what Eli said, a very good svara, which is that, is it, let's say I send this kid to the institution, am I feeding him? I mean, definitely I'm involved in the process. But is that considered losa achilum? So maybe you could argue, no, losa achilum means you hand the kid the food.
Maybe you put it on the table in front of him. Maybe you shove it in his mouth. I don't know how far you have to go, but you give the kid the food. Here, you send the kid to the institution, and then a guy feeds him the food. I don't know, you want to say it's a mir la'akam? The guy knows that you want... I don't know. It's not not so simple like that. So the Chacham Sofer says you can't necessarily pin this on him as lo sa'achilim because he's not directly feeding the food to the kid, and therefore maybe you get out of it that way. But the Iker Svar that we mentioned, he says, wouldn't suffice because that's considered darshinan time of the Kor. Moshe Feinstein has a different answer. It's in some ways simpler, but in some ways it's harder to understand. It's in the beginning of Chelek Aleph. How are you doing? It's the beginning of Chelek Aleph of Yoredeya in Simin Vav. So in Iker's Moshe, Moshe Feinstein says that the reason is because even though it's true that the kid's not going to be punished for doing the isser of lo sa'achilum, of eating the treif, of eating the nevela, whatever the case might be, there's no punishment, but he's still a maisa avera. He still did something wrong, and you don't want to feed a kid isurim because even though he's not going to get punished, he's still doing the wrong thing. It sounds simple, but also it's kind of strange, right? Is that true? When a kid does an avera, he did something wrong and it's just that he's not punished? Or he didn't even do anything wrong because he's a kid? It's a lamdish chakira, and actually in the Kaila we're learning Masechah Sanhedrin, so when we started the Parak Ben Sora Amora, which is about a Ben Sora Amora, very good, wow, you guys are really sharp, yeah, about a Ben Sora Amora, I thought you were going to say about my son or something, but yeah, about the Ben Sora Amora, so we were talking about this concept of a kid doing an Avera before the age of 13. Is it an Avera just with an exemption from the punishment, or is it not an Avera at all? So Rav Moshe, in this basic presentation, seems to be assuming one side of that, which is interesting. Either way, whatever the reason might be, we have this Isser Daraisa, biblical prohibition of Lo Sa'achilim, which we have from three psukim, Tumas Kayanim, Shratzim, and Achilas Achilas Dam. So we have an Isser called Lo Sa'achilim. It's also colloquially referred to, because the Gemara says this, as Lo Safinan. Lo Safinan Biadayim means we don't feed them with our hands. We don't actively feed a kid Isurim or cause him to do Averos proactively with our hands to trip him up.
Does anyone say they still get punished?
The kid? No. No, nobody says he gets punished, no. Until you're 13 years old, and even then, really until you're 20 years old, the Bidei Shemayim, but even Bidei Adam, not until 13. Or 12 for a woman. Yeah, so we noted that the Shulchan Aruch assumes that Isser, at some point in history, when let's say the kid is already the age of Chinuch, so a parent has to separate him from all Yisurim, and a third party has to separate him from all Isurim except for their abundance, right? That wasn't up to them. But in terms of the issue of feeding a kid Isurim, that we assume is across the board, seem to assume, was across the board. The Shulchan Aruch said, Isur Daraisa, Isur Darabanan. That makes sense, right? Meaning, Usur is Usur. We're Orthodox Jews, which means we believe in what the Torah says, and we believe the rabbis are explaining and rightfully adding Gedarim, Siyagim, protective measures to make sure we keep the Torah to the fullest extent. So we keep the Rabbanans, right? We're from Jews. So that makes perfect sense. But the truth is, if you look in source 7, we'll get to it soon, we have this on the second page. So Chacham Ovadia has a long discussion where he really works on this concept, whether it's really true that it's just as usher to feed a child an Isser Darabanan as it is to cause him to do an Isser Daraisa, a biblical Isser. And Ravaja basically notes that it's a Machlokas Rishonim. If you look, I put some of it here at source number 7, but he quotes the Ran in Masechas Yuma. The Ran says that while it's true that a parent or another person can't feed an Isser Daraisa, a biblical prohibition, to a child, even though he's under the age of 13, that is true, Lo Safinan, right, you're not allowed to feed them the Isser. Even though that's true, that's only true about a biblical Isser, not true about an Isser Darabanan. The Rashba says the same thing, although elsewhere he tells us that he doesn't paskin that way. He's just telling us that he thinks in svar and logic it makes sense. The Ran says the whole Isser only applies to Isurim Daraisa, but the Rambam at the very end of Machalos Asuros, Halachos of Forbidden Foods, the Rambam writes that it's even prohibited to feed the kid in Isser Darabanan, to feed the kid a food that's rabbinically prohibited. What's that machlok is about? What's that machlok is about? So Rav Avadia says a brilliant explanation, which all the Achronim really say in some shape or form, which is the following. He explains that when it comes to Isurim Daraisa, when the Torah says something is Usur, the item becomes Usur. So the Torah says, I don't know, the Torah says that that treif is treif, correct? So now that object is objectively treif. Meaning it's an object of treif. It's the object itself exudes treifness. It's objectively usser. It's an isser cheftza, we call it. The cheftza, the object, has isser in it, correct? What about when Chazal say, don't do something lest it lead to something else? and Isser Darabanan. Does that make the Chefza Aser? No. The object is still Mutter because the Torah never said it's Aser. But the Gavra, the person, can't utilize that object, can't do that thing. So why, whereas the Torah will say something's Aser and that makes an Isser Chefza, that makes something objectively Aser in its essence, when the Rabbanan, when the rabbis say something is Aser, the item doesn't become Aser. The person just becomes commanded not to utilize it. Right, meaning, exactly, it's not objectively usher, correct. Now, there's a discussion in general on Shabbos. Is Shabbos objective Isurim, or is an Isur time-bound Isur? That's an interesting discussion. Rabbi Yosef Engel writes about this. But that's the general approach. There's one famous nafkamina that everyone quotes, or Avadja quotes as well. That's from the Nesivos HaMishpat. The Nesivos HaMishpat says that if someone violates, and not everyone agrees to this, but he says that, let's say you violate an Isur Daraisa B'Shogeg. So there's still carbon, correct? That's what the Ramban explains to us in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, that the psukim, you know, we think about karbanos, every time a guy does an aveira, they have to bring karban. Not really. When you do an aveira, you're probably going to get malchus or killed if you had, you know, edus and all of that. That's what happens when you do an aveira on purpose. When you do an aveira by accident, you have the opportunity to bring karban, a chatas, shigasav, is bechatas if the iser is an iser kares. So you bring karban for an iser b'shogig, an inadvertent sin, correct? Why do you have to bring a karban if you did an it was accident. It was an accident. It was inadvertent. It was shogeg. Why do you have to bring carbon? So that's not... What? So you could say, you know, the action was still an inherently bad act, or a minashmayim, there's some reason for it. You definitely could say that, and there's a level of truth to that. What the Ramban says even more practically is that, yeah, it was a shogeg. You know, let's think of an example. You're not allowed to pluck fruit from a tree on Shabbos, correct? So on Saturday, you're walking down the street, and you see a nice fruit tree, and you say to yourself, oh, it's Sunday, I'll just pluck fruit off the tree. And you plug it, oh no, it's Shabbos. So you forgot it was Shabbos. Or you're walking down the street on Saturday, you see a fruit tree, you say, remember, it's Shabbos. And then you see the fruit tree, and you say, oh, but it's mutter, I think, to pull a fruit down on Shabbos. So you pull it off, and then you remember, oh no, it's Aser. Right? Either you forgot it was Shabbos, or you forgot what you're doing is Aser. That's shogeg. So it's true, you were inadvertent. But really, really, this was a preventable thing. No? A little more care, a little more concern, a little more attention being paid, and you wouldn't have violated this Isser inadvertently. So says the Ramban and other Mefarshim, you owe a karban to get a kapara, to get atonement, because you put yourself in a situation where you did that inadvertent sin. Even if the Avera itself was accidental, but the concept, the fact that situationally you were in the process of being able to sin, was really somewhat attributable to your lack of concern for the Avera. Either way, so the Nesivos HaMishpat says, when you have an Isser Daraisa, you need atonement for violating an Isser. But when you have an Isser Darabanan, the Nesivos says, even if you violate it, Bishogeg, you don't need Kapara at all. Why not? So he explains, because when you have, or the Achronim explain what he's trying to say, when you have, even at all, why? Because an Isser Daraisa, like you said before, it's objectively Usser. So when you inadvertently violate it, you've done something inadvertently. But a Isser Darabanan or a Binnik prohibition, it's only an Isser on the person. It's not an Isser objectively. It's not an Isser Cheftza. So when you violate it inadvertently, you didn't do anything. Nothing happened. Objectively, nothing happened. So you don't owe any atonement. You don't deserve. You don't owe whatever. There's no atonement to be had for such a violation. It's not a violation at all. It's a zero. So it says, says Rav Avadja, maybe that's what's going on over here. The Ran and the Rashba, they say an Isser Darabanan is Isser Gavra. It's on the person. So the person is not allowed to eat this Isser Darabanan, this rabbinically treif item. Okay? So if a adult does it, they weren't allowed to do it. The person's not allowed to eat it, correct? What if an adult tries to feed it to a kid? The item itself is not Usser, but the Gavra is not allowed to eat it. The person's not allowed to eat it. Okay, so who's the person in this case? A kid. A kid doesn't have Isser Gavra. He's a little kid. He's not Chayiv. So there's no Isser here. You're giving something that's objectively mutter to a kid who doesn't have an Isser Gavra, doesn't have an Isser on himself to eat it. Shalom al Yisrael. So what's the Rambam say? Because remember, the Rambam said in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins this way, that no, even when it's an Isser Darabanan, you can't feed it to a young kid. So the Rambam says, no, I think even rabbinic Isurim are also an Isser Chafetza. And he would disagree with everything we said until now. That's what Rav Avadja suggests, a Chiddush, that maybe the Rambam holds that even an Isser Darabanan is also objectively Usser. So it's true, the kid is not Chayiv in Mitzvos, but you're giving him something which is objectively Ma'achalos Asuros. It's forbidden food objectively, and that's problematic. Now that's a fascinating chiddush in the Rambam. You would definitely disagree with it, but that's what Chacham Avadja said. If you want to be on someone's side, I assume you'll pick Rav Avadja before you. Until you learn how to argue, you're going to pick the side with him. He has enough pages about it that's not worth arguing. What? That in according to some of the Rishonim, I can give a child an Isser Darabana to eat. Because if an Isser Darabanan is only on the person, but it's not actually objectively Usser, then the person is a kid. He's not obligated to keep the mitzvah. So I can give it to him. But if you assume that the Darabanan is also an Isser Chetzah, it's also objectively Usser, the object becomes Usser itself, then I can't even give it to a kid because a kid can't consume something which is Usser. For sure. But we're only going to say that if it's something which is Usser in the first place. Getting him accustomed to do things that are mutter is fine. It wasn't Usser at that stage. It has to be something which is objectively Usser for that to be a problem. Now, the most prevalent case where this comes up, which is what you asked about last time, you see on the sheet, right, is the question, which is really what Rav Avadja is talking about in this tshuva that we quoted from, is the question of, which we're building up to, is the question, if you look in source number 6, of eating dairy after meat. So we assume, la halacha, this is based on Gemara's and Maseches Chulin, that when a person eats fleishig, the fleishig stays with them. There's two ways to explain this, either because it's in their teeth, or because the digestive system has to take time to put it all down, we assume you're fleishig for a number of hours or for some amount of time after that. If you remember from the Shavuos night share, we spoke about the... You were there also. So we spoke about... And you were there also. Okay. Sorry. We would have loved to have you. We didn't know you. I wasn't friends yet. So we spoke about how the Chassam Sofer thought that it was about digestion, which is why when he went to sleep, he thought your digestive system worked faster. You remember this? So he made himself a cup of coffee, even though he went to sleep fleishik, and the coffee spilled on him, and he was wondering whether it's midan shamayim that he wasn't supposed to do it. Fine. So we assume that you're not allowed to eat dairy directly after meat. Okay. Min HaTorah, the only isser is to eat meat and dairy when they were cooked together. Derech bishul. Additionally, midarabanan, you can't even eat them when they're not cooked together. Additionally, midarabanan also, you can't eat them even when they're separated by some distance, one after the other, dairy after meat. Right? That stuff's all pretty basic to everyone? Okay, good. So the question is as follows. Let's assume for now the Minig Yisrael, the Minig Ashkenaz, for sure, Svardim. Even the Minig Ashkenaz, even though the Ramas is differently, we assume like the Svardim on this, is to wait 6 hours between meat, fleishigs, and milk, dairy, milchigs. Correct? 6 hours. Do you have to train a child in that also? Can you give a child a bottle of milk after you just had chillin? Or do you have to train him? You have to wait, or not train him, but just los achilim. You can't feed him treif. Meaning it's not even a question of chinah. Whether you need to teach him or not, fine, we'll worry about the ages that he's up to. But can I literally put cheese on his tray after he had fleishigs 15 minutes ago, an hour ago, 2 hours ago? Is that permissible? What would you guess? Let's just do simple math here. Are you allowed to eat dairy immediately after meat? No. Okay. Hold on. Are you allowed to feed something which is usser to a child? Okay, so 1 plus 1 equals 2, which means you cannot feed a child dairy after meat. Why not? Explain. Okay, excellent. Excellent. That's also interesting. Good. So the major distinction, which I guess is pretty pretty obvious, but it's important to flesh out, no pun intended, flesh. Either way. There are sometimes good jokes, sometimes bad jokes. It's fine. You're like, everyone has, there's percentages to these things. It's not like, so tray food, I don't know, meat that's not geshachted, meat that wasn't shechted, nevela, things like this. That, the object is usher. When it comes to basar b'chalav, when they're combined, it's an object which is asr. I hear that. But meat is kosher. Dairy is kosher. Eating them within the same time frame of 6 hours is not allowed. But it's not shreif. It's not ma'achalos asuros. Now, if you're really sharp, you make the argument, well, if the whole reason is that it's stuck in your teeth. So maybe if it's still stuck in your teeth, it is basar and chalav together. There's easy pushback to that. But basically speaking, it's not an iser chetza. It's not an object. And based on that, Rav Meisher Sternbach writes in a tshuva, and Rav Avadja Yosef says the exact same thing here in source number 7. He says, no. If it's an iser gavra like this, it's not going to be subject to the same exact rules as all other cases. Maybe the Rambam will tell you that even an iser darabanan is an iser chetza, meaning treif midarabanan, nevela midarabanan, you can't feed a kid. But basar... chalav after basar within an hour, within 2 hours, within 10, whatever, within 6 hours, is not an object. No one's going to say it's an object. It's just a timing issue. So you don't necessarily have the iser of lo sa'achilum, of not feeding a kid milchigs after fleishigs, because it's just a timing issue, not an actual object of iser. Now, what is the halacha l'maisa? How do we train kids, prevent kids, give to kids? Do we give a bottle after a meat? What do we actually do? So I wrote this down because it's hard to remember all the opinions, but it's interesting to note, and we'll list some of them now. It's interesting to note that until fairly recently, there was no real serious literature about what the halachos or the minhagim are here. Meaning in terms of when you can feed a kid milk after meat or not, there wasn't really clear literature written on this until more recently. So one example, the Sefer, I think I quoted it last week, Rav Harfenis. Remember that name, Rav Harfenis? Rav Harfenis has the Sefer Chinuch Yisrael. I think last week I told you it was on its way across the country to me in a box. It came along with, in case my wife listens, I don't want to say how much, but a lot of dollars worth of svarim came in a box. So the Rav Harfenis in the Sefer Chinuch Yisrael, he quotes some who are completely makel. And they say, maybe like the same way the Rama quotes that you're allowed to wait within an hour, Dutch minug, everyone's familiar with the Dutch minug, that you can wait an hour and you're good to have milk after meat. So all kids, we were never machmir, they could have milk after meat after an hour. That doesn't seem to be the generally accepted practice, but he does quote some who say that. Then Rav Vosner comes along and is true with Shevet Alevi and other places as well. Rav Vosner provides a system, but he doesn't give you something so specific. He just says that it has to be gradual. So it has to go in gradations. Start with 1 hour, then 2 hours and 3 hours. Make sure you build up to six by the time the kid is mature. He doesn't tell you what year, what amount, etc. So the post can have to give us a little more detail here. So there's a sefer by Rav Simcha Banim Kohn, which is, he's a famous posek in Lakewood, he's a famous author also. He writes all these English books, The Shabbos Kitchen, The Radiance of Shabbos. You familiar with these? These thin art books? Very good. Very, very good. So he has a book on children and halacha. And in there he writes the following guidelines. Under the age of three, no weight at all. Under the age of three, the kid has chont. You should wash out his mouth. You should make sure he doesn't have chont in the mouth. But then, what's the parallel to chont for you guys? Huh? Yeah, so chont. So you feed him chont and 40 minutes later, you want to give him a bottle of milk? Totally fine, you're allowed to do that. Between 3 years old and 6 years old, if it's possible, you should be waiting an hour. The kid should wait an hour before he has dairy afterwards. After the age of six, there should be a full waiting of 6 hours, because at that point, the kid's chayv in chinuch. If the kid's very, he's throwing a tantrum, he's getting worked up, he's crying, he's very insistent that he have dairy, and he's 6 years old, 7 years old, so the post can assume that all children are considered a chola shembo sakana, meaning you don't want to put them at risk, you don't want them crying too much, you don't want them to be, don't tell the kids this, but if they cry enough, we'll do anything for them. That is the truth. So it's true in Hilchos Shabbos as well. So because of that, if until age 9 or 10, if the kid is really getting worked up, we would still give him the dairy, but generally speaking, we should try to avoid it after the age of 6 and keep the 6 hours at that point. Rav Meisher Sternbach has a very similar system. Under 3 years, no waiting at all. 3 years older, 1 hour. Then 5, 6 years old should be 3 hours. By 10 years old, you should get him up to the point of 6 hours. So it's a little more lenient. You have between, between 3 and 6 to get to 3 hours, and from then on to get to 6 hours until he's 10. But basically the same system. And Rav Moshe Stern in the Deber Chinuch Rav and the Ber Moshe, he has a similar concept. Rav Harfenis quotes some who say you should go year by year. 1 year old, 1 hour, 2 year old, 2 hours, 3 year old, 3 hours. I think makes sense. Like, it actually adds up pretty well, but it's not sourced in any Gemara. It's just a good idea. It's not like the Pasuk and by the Meraglim, the Yom Lashana. There's a payback for every year the kid gets older. You have to give him, you have to keep him more hours away. I'm already waiting 30 hours, 31 hours now. 31 hours between, it doesn't grow with your age, but it's a good way to train them. One thing the post can note, and we'll end with this, and maybe we'll discuss something in the Parsha. One thing the post can do note is that when it comes to the halachas we're talking about, the kid needs milk. The kid needs dairy. He needs something, so you can give him the milk in order to sustain him. The kid, you want to give him ice cream because you want to spoil him, and he just had cholent. That's not a reason to feed him the dairy of the milk. We're talking about when it's necessary. When it's unnecessary, you want to avoid it as much as possible for multiple reasons. For the halachic reason, also because we assume anything which is treif, anything which is forbidden, it causes some spiritual concern for the kid as well, what we call timtum alev, which may or may not apply by basar b'chalav, but it's important to keep our kids, as nucky, as clean as possible, and therefore we shouldn't be doing this gratuitously.